Traumatic Brain Injury Recovery.
Hi, I'm Dan Gardner, and I talk about traumatic brain injury recovery. And today I'm pleased to be speaking with brain injury survivor, Angela. Welcome, Angela.
Hi, thanks for having me, Dan.
When was your injury? And tell me a bit about the nature of the injury.
Oh boy, it was a May 24th, Friday before Memorial Day weekend, and I was hit head on by a reckless driver in a Dodge Ram pickup truck going over 55 miles an hour in a 35 mile per hour zone.
Oh boy.
So it was about 5 minutes from home. And they cut me out of the car and they flew me to the hospital.
What sort of damage was done?
Well, it's almost like what sort of damage wasn't done. I had severe trauma to my brain, a traumatic brain injury. The list goes on and on, but my skull was stitched and stapled. I had over 1,000 stitches to my face and my body. Lacerated liver, punctured lung, renal contusion, mesentery contusion, four broken ribs. I scraped the cornea on my eye, and actually I had to talk with my mother to find out all the injuries because I didn't really remember all of them. And that's some of the trauma from the brain injury.
Well, this was massive injuries. How long ago did that happen?
That will be 17 years this Friday, May 24th.
So we're talking about in a few days, in about 3 days. So I'm going to ask you a little later about your thoughts and feelings as the anniversary of your injury approaches. Tell me a little about your recovery. What happened during the recovery?
Well, I was in the hospital for 6 days, and partially I was in surgical ICU. And after that 6 day, I had the chance to either go to a rehabilitation center or my parents taking me home and taking care of me. And I slept on the couch for about the first 6 weeks, 7 weeks, and I wasn't even able to get upstairs. And I was having, you know, they were giving me medicine every 4 hours for the trauma to my brain, the trauma to my body. A physical therapist would come to the house. I wasn't able to really move much. I did have a walker, so I was scooting around on my little walker. The physical therapist lifted up my legs, moved my arms for me. And then after that 6 weeks is when I decided to, I didn't decide. The doctors decided, and my parents brought me to physical therapy in addition to speech therapy. I was playing the game of memory. The last time I played the game of memory was when I was a little girl.
Yeah.
And trying to think some other things. I went to a neuro-ophthalmologist as well, and all sorts of other specialty doctors. I had some forgetfulness, some dizziness. I didn't remember the setbacks that I had at that point. I have them now, and I've had them for the past 17 years. We'll probably talk a little bit about that. But the recovery was really long. I didn't get back in the car until probably like 4 months later, and just had the courage to put myself in that situation to keep pressing forward rather than feel like a victim.
I see. So at the time of the injury, were you knocked unconscious?
Yes. I don't remember anything. They cut me out of the car. They flew me to the hospital. And I don't really remember anything until probably going to Connecticut that 4 months later to go see my college volleyball team play volleyball. And before that, I don't really remember much. I know that a lot of friends came to visit me. Family would come to visit me from out of town. But there's very few memories that I can recall unless somebody really helps jog my memory to say, oh, don't you remember that, Angie?
So you're saying that before you had a clear and continuous memory, it was months after the accident.
I would say that, yeah. And before the accident, I was like a 23-year-old living in northern New Jersey, commuting to the city. My first job out of college, life was pretty great. I was playing beach volleyball. I was in great shape physically. That helped prepare me for the accident. I'm so grateful for that. I had about 20 pounds of muscle on me from playing college volleyball, which actually protected me from like losing my arm. I have 400 stitches to my arm here. And just that physical strength to, you know, survive. So I'm grateful for that. That put me in a more prepared position to get through the trauma.
Tell me a little more about your situation before the injury.
That's a great question. I was just out of college. It was about a year after 9/11. I was working in Manhattan for the Columbia House Company. Remember that company, like 10 CDs for a dollar? Well,
yes.
I was working for them, doing some admin work. I felt like it was really cool. Life was fun. Commuting to Manhattan and going to the beach, Jersey Shore, playing some volleyball, spending time with friends and family, and just looking forward. It was a Friday before Memorial Day weekend is when the accident happened. So I had plans to go to a barbecue and was just really living a fun life in my early 20s.
Wow. And then this happened out of the blue.
Yeah, out of the blue. Like, life changed in an instant.
Yeah. Tell me about some of the bigger challenges during the recovery period.
Well, probably just not being able to be physical and walk around and exercise. I had a walker. I used to sit outside, put my feet in the pool. If people came over in my parents' backyard, I always had a hat on. I had to have my face covered. I had double vision, so I had a patch over this eye. So when I would go out, people would stare at me, and my legs were completely black and blue. So I was self-conscious about that. And some of the other things I'd say were, you know, just forgetfulness, even maybe a little bit right now. I like to actually ask, what was the question again?
What were some of the biggest challenges during your recovery period?
During the recovery. Also going to the neurologist and going in the, what do you have to go into, like the MRI, you have to get MRIs and those scans and stuff. So that was traumatic going back into the hospital, and I'd have triggers. And I used to call them setbacks. I would have these setbacks, and they were actually, I was diagnosed with epilepsy and complex partial seizure. I didn't even really know what a seizure was. I don't even like to say the word seizure because it sounds so traumatic. But when that happened to me, I didn't really know what was happening. I would just always smell these familiar smells. And I always look at my hands and sometimes go off into this like space. You know, I look out somewhere else for like 30 to 2 minutes and just kind of like blank out for a little bit and then kind of come back to center. I didn't really know what I was experiencing, but that's what the epilepsy that I, the seizures that I was suffering from at that time. I used to call them setbacks. And my mom kept a really good diary of how often they would happen. And we'd go to the neurologist, and he suggested a type of medicine. I just decided not to go on the medicine. I thought that I could handle it with sleep and you know, eating well and a good sleep hygiene. So it was difficult, though. They were happened a lot.
So during that time, you must have felt out of control.
Yeah. Most of the time, yeah, I really couldn't have any control over anything that was happening. I surrendered it all. It wasn't anything that I could really, take control of. I was completely dependent on my family and my friends for that support, and specifically the doctors to give me the hope and the direction of how my recovery was going to be, or just something to look forward to.
What did you imagine the future was going to be like when you were going through recovery?
I guess I didn't really imagine a future. I knew that one day I wanted to be a motivational speaker and think like, well, all this hard stuff that happened to me, there must be a bigger purpose or reason behind it. And I was going to do something about it. I studied marketing in college, and I was doing marketing after college. So I thought, all right, well, I'm going to make sure the world knows that I can be a hope angel for them. And that's this vision that I had, but it wasn't anything very specific about what the future looked like.
You used the accident to sort of stimulate and maybe catalyze your progression into becoming an inspirational speaker.
Absolutely. I felt like I can't just let what I've learned from this and all the trauma that happened to me, I can't just keep that to myself. And it wasn't about me and focusing on, look at what happened to me. It's about, what did I learn? And through my recovery process with psychologists and EMDR and different types of symptoms and recovery and coping strategies that I've tried and done to help pay that forward, to help other people and give them a sense of hope that they can get through it, whether it's brain trauma or any sort of PTSD, cognitive health issues, epilepsy, and maybe even give like a different face for epilepsy. Because when we hear seizure, we think, or at least I thought, this is probably the first time that I've ever shared with the public. What a great time to say that.
Yeah.
That I have that.
Yeah.
And now I'm a professional kicking ass, pardon my French, but to be a fearless badass, even though you've got some challenges.
So they were challenges, but you're very proud of having faced them directly and overcome them.
Absolutely, and giving other people the hope to do the same thing.
Now let me take you back to the recovery period, because you didn't like being dependent on other people. You weren't in control of your thoughts, your feelings, your body wasn't. So how did you cope with that? What did you feel about being out of control and having to be forced to be dependent on other people? What was it like for you?
Well, the coping strategies, I wrote a lot. I needed to express myself. So I kept a lot of journals to get my feelings out. I also went to go, actually, I think weekly, I would go and talk with a therapist about my challenges that I was facing, like living at home in my early 20s with my parents.
It was a step backward.
Yeah, it was a step back. It was like two steps, three steps back. And it was like, okay, well, what am I really doing with my life now? I'm completely dependent on them. So I journaled, spoke with friends, actually went to a brain injury like support group in mm-hmm. Northern New Jersey. That's where the accident was, to try mm-hmm. and meet with other people who had similar challenges. That mm-hmm. helped a little bit.
Good. So the support group was helpful to share similar experiences. Yeah.
And I only went a couple of times. I felt that I was maybe further along in my recovery. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it was difficult for me to not be around other people who were pushing me to do more and kind of not poke at me, but just challenge me to, keep striving. So yeah. I enjoyed being around the group, but I felt like my recovery when I joined was a little misaligned.
Gotcha.
So I looked for other ways to cope with some of the challenges that I had. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It does. Well, you're saying, I think what you're saying is you like to be motivated to reach your full potential.
Absolutely.
And you didn't want to just settle. That's what I'm hearing. And that makes sense. Being a competitive volleyball player, I would think that that's an athlete's mentality.
I wanted to surround myself with other people or just read a lot. I've read a lot of books and journal a lot to be like, well, what can I do about this now? It's like this, I almost got killed in a really bad car accident. Like, I need to do something about this. In fact, I think it was maybe the summer or a couple summers after I volunteered at the hospital. I was a medevac patient and was asked to speak during Nurses Week to give the nurses and the doctors a sense of hope of like, look at how great you've done mm-hmm. and how I've come along, to just motivate them, doctors. Yeah.
It must have felt wonderful for you to speak to these medical personnel, because they rarely see their patients return after having made a good recovery.
Yeah. And just to mention this, Dan, what's pretty crazy is 8 years after the accident, I was medevac to Hackensack University Medical Center, level one trauma center in New Jersey. And 8 years later, I was selling hospital stretchers, beds for Stryker, and that was one of my accounts. So I was shaking the hands of Dr. John Locurdo 8 years after, saying, thanks for saving my life. Do you guys remember that? It was a Friday before Memorial Day weekend. They're like, yeah, we had a lot of people come in, but I think we remember you. So just interesting the way that happened and how life brought me there after nearly dying in that hospital.
What a sense of accomplishment, because, it was a blessing that your body healed, but it was great that you pushed yourself and took the efforts to, again, use your full resources and capacities to get to that point.
Yeah. Right.
So tell me about friends. What role did your friends play in your recovery?
They were really supportive. In fact, I was just in New Jersey going through the box of all the stuff from my accident probably just about 2 weeks ago, and opening up cards and journals from friends that sent me cards like every week, and journals checking in on me. And I'm just so grateful for the circle of friends that I have that I still keep in touch with, that I choose to like motivate and give like these little inspire moments. I post it on like social media and my Facebook page to kind of encourage them and to thank them for, the support that they've given me. I'm really blessed by that community, and even the community that I have out here in San Diego as well.
What a nice thing to do. I think it's always a great thing to acknowledge and appreciate those people that have played an important role in our lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's probably one of my love languages too. I'm really in touch to make sure I know that. So everybody knows that I'm a big hugger. So I always mm-hmm. need to hug, and I want to squeeze them tight every time I see them. Mm-hmm. And words of affirmation. So if I can pour it out and share that on other people and build them mm-hmm. up, that's part of my DNA, Dan. I have to. That's why I'm still here.
Well,
that's how I feel.
Yeah, I think that means a lot, and it says a lot. And that's really great to model that kind of behavior to other people.
Right.
Because as you know, not everybody's comfortable with that kind of emotional expression.
Right, yeah. I always like to make sure that I am insightful or perceptive. I don't want to push it too much and make them feel uncomfortable. But if there's a way for me to build them up And I think that's why I'm in sales. I've always been in sales, and it's a way to build relationships with people. And it's allowed me to use the skills, especially, you know, if I could share this, when I was in physical therapy, next to ladies who were like senior citizens. And I was in speech therapy with people who were like really mentally challenged, much more than I was. And it gave me this ability to relate to different people, different ages, different challenges. And I'm really, really grateful for that experience because it allowed me to just have that compassion and understand how they felt. And I think that's helped me along in my life.
Having gone through something like that, it's a lot easier to feel empathy and compassion for people who are struggling with that kind of a challenge. You told me about your friends being very supportive and your basic attitude of wanting to make the best recovery possible. How did your goals in life change?
Well, I thought that I was going to be I interned for the New York Knicks during college. And so I thought, well, I'm going to be like a sports broadcaster and work back in New York City and do that. And that changed because I thought to myself, well, what do you really want to do with your life? You know, you've almost lost it. You want to be, you know, get back in touch with like what's in here. Sometimes I was just kind of going through the motions thinking, well, I just have to get a job and keep moving forward. But life is really short, and I sometimes need to remind myself that, like, today is all that we have.
Use it wisely, huh?
Use it wisely. So I actually recently joined Toastmasters, and I did my first icebreaker talk last week. And the reason I mentioned this is because I talked about my relationship with time. And the first point was, like, I take time really seriously. Me and time have a serious relationship. And what that means to me is I like to maximize it and take a look at how I use it wisely because we don't know how much time we have here. So sometimes that works against me because I'm pretty, you know, self-disciplined. Sometimes I need to give myself some rest and not suffer from the achiever syndrome, but I tend to, take life a little too seriously sometimes. So I wish I could have a little bit of that, more of that relaxed, fun side.
Well,
often.
I hear you want to be productive
yes.
and you want to stay as engaged in life as possible. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Did your career goals change after the accident?
Because I got into pharmaceutical sales. I thought, well, I could use my marketing background and medical sales. I thought that would help me get into something where I could talk about the trauma and use my marketing background. So I guess my goals did change a little. I don't think I really had any goals after. I don't remember what my goals were during or even before the accident, maybe doing the sports broadcasting thing. But I think it was more of wanting to be a motivational speaker, make a difference in the world. But I thought, well, how do you make a living doing that? So I thought, well, use your marketing and, you know, medical sales, and then that just kind of moved along, and then things shifted in my life, and I got into coaching and speaking to try and encourage, inspire, motivate, and challenge people to never stop believing in themselves or their dreams. And that's when I started Angie's Journey, which is a blog and a YouTube channel I started when I left for California from New Jersey almost 8.5 years ago.
Well, it's impressive when somebody like you has walked the talk.
Right. Thank you. Because that really means a lot. And that like fills me up when I hear encouragement like that to just, it's like throwing more fuel on the fire. Then it's like, I'm just going to go out there and do even more to see how I can build hope and inspire people to think of their life differently and to give them some ideas or suggestions and be a resource for them. If there's anything that I've been through, whether it's PTSD or, you know, seizures or epilepsy or the trauma, if there's anything that I can do to be a resource for them.
Well, I can see you get your energy from helping people and making an important, meaningful connection with other people. So tell me about advice you have. Having gone through this recovery process and overcome a lot of challenges, what advice do you have for survivors? What advice do you have for families? And what about advice for healthcare professionals?
Okay, those are all really good questions, and I want to make sure I answer all of them. So advice for other survivors is don't give up, and remember that you we're made for a purpose. And this is part of your story now. I didn't think, you know, I thought when this was happening to me, like, why me? What am I going to do about this? But it wasn't why me. It was, what am I going to do about this now? This is my life now. I can choose to be a victim, or I can choose to be like a warrior or a survivor. So that would be my advice for you survivors out there. You're a fearless badass. I'm sorry for saying that again, but you got to think it, and it all starts up here. That's why I decided to become like a strength and conditioning coach, but not for this muscle, for this muscle, to help inspire and educate other survivors to keep going, even when the times get tough. I'd say for families to just have patience. And it has to be really hard. I don't know what that would be like to see my child or a loved one suffer so much pain that sometimes you can't see. We can't see what's going on in here and what they're feeling. But to have patience, and then to keep the conversation deep. Ask a lot of questions. How does that make you feel? Tell me more about that. Because I think the stronger the conversation, the deeper the relationship. And I probably would say that for some advice for like other medical professionals that deal with people who have TBI is to, same thing, go deep with those questions, have patience, and to allow the survivor to express themselves in the way that's most comfortable for them. Maybe it isn't as expressive like I am, or be able to articulate how they're feeling, but maybe it's through journaling or through singing or dancing or whatever that may be, to allow them to really feel comfortable in their own skin and to mimic that so that they feel comfortable opening up and sharing more of their pain with you.
One way of putting it is don't get stuck in this position of being passive and powerless.
Right.
Take control and do what you can, given the resources that you have, to make the best out of your life.
Right.
You feel a lot better about yourself and life.
Yeah. Yeah. Even though we're dealt with these circumstances, we've got a choice in how we can deal with them. Right.
That's right. How we react to them.
And we have to like how we react to it. And it's facing that. And when we wake up every day, it's like, I can choose to be this like warrior and go out and like do better than I did yesterday, or I can just kind of let time pass by and think like, well, it'll just get better eventually. But I think we have a lot of power over our thoughts, and I'm really big on that. So I try and use other coping strategies. Like when I have too many browsers open in my brain, I need to shut them down, focus on my breathing or doing some meditation to just bring it back to right here and right now, because this is all that we have. And coming back to time, I always like to say, like, take time seriously, like your life depends on it.
What other things would you like to add?
That whether it's for survivors or anybody out there, you know, I keep going back to, you were made with a purpose. And I feel like why this happened, I didn't understand it then, 17 years ago, even 15 years ago, even with the seizures that I still have, I don't understand why, but there's a bigger reason why. And I believe that God has me on a path now that's purposeful. And I'm just going to be a relentless warrior to make sure that everybody has a little hope. And I always say to my friends, and some of them know me as the Hope Angel, and I kind of refer myself as this Hope Angel to inspire and educate a lot of professionals and people out there to never lose hope in themselves, because this is all that we have right now. And I know it may seem like, oh, whatever, we just have tomorrow, but that's not a guarantee. So if I can like resuscitate somebody's heart by my words, then, you know, bring it on. I'm ready.
Yeah. So that's a wonderful thing to do, and a wonderful gift for somebody else. You talked about the anniversary of your accident being in about 3 days. Mm-hmm. What thoughts and feelings have come up to the surface as you approach this anniversary?
Well, I was kind of going through some of the questions before and prepping for this interview. I started to get a little emotional, and I think I'm stronger than I was, or maybe not stronger, more at peace. That's the word. I'm more at peace with it now than I was probably 5 years ago, or even last year. And I think because I just finally went through the big box of looking at articles and pictures of, you know, the bloody airbag, and my car looks like a convertible, and, you know, it looked like a convertible. It wasn't a convertible. Just going through those cards and the journals and closing that chapter. That's just a little puzzle piece of who I am, but it's not me. So I think that that allowed me to process it completely. So I'm more prepared for this year's anniversary and to really celebrate life in a whole new way. And yeah. I'm excited about that. I can just tell because I'm not getting emotional right now. And usually I do when I talk about it. So I know that there's been healing up here because of the way that I'm responding since you've asked me that question. So
Agreed. Yeah. Very good. Angela, I really appreciate the time and effort you've taken to share your experience with me. And I wish you the best going forward.
Yeah. Thanks, Dan. It's been a pleasure.
Please like, subscribe, and comment.